Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, we're having our first Pride of Olympus panel discussion. In the original Star Trek series, Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise fought and defeated Apollo, a star god who was honored by the ancient Greeks, but not before one of his crew members, Lieutenant Carolyn Palamas, became pregnant with the Olympian deity's seed. And there the plot thread dangled for a while. Since then, James Blish expanded the tale in his classic adaptation of Who Mourns for Adonais. Peter David also continued the tale in New Frontiers, his innovative offshoot of the next generation Star Trek mythos. And the fan-made Star Trek Continues series launched with Pilgrim to Eternity, which featured the return of Apollo in the original episode. And there it was, and we're going to take it further from there. I'd like to greet my panelists. Greetings, Mr. Michael DelRussi. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm very good. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here as well. Good evening, Tina and Brian Chandler. How are you?
Hi, Hercules. We're doing pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that. And last but not least, greetings, Bob. How are you doing, Bob Bosler?
Doing great. Gee, it seems only like yesterday that we were talking.
Yes, doesn't it? Yeah.
Great to be back.
It's great to have you back. And I want to congratulate Bob Bosler. You are now in charge of Region 7. Is that not correct?
God have mercy on my soul. But no, I'm thrilled by the opportunity, and Wayne did a fantastic job, but I'm glad to be in the center now of the star base as well as a ship. But it's thrilling to be back, and we got a lot of good plans ahead. So, you know, and it went very rapidly this week. Everything. So
I can imagine it's really a lot of work because you have how many starships do you currently have?
We have 21 now. Which while we've had more in the past, we have more actual members. We have 500 just in the Region 7 area. We have 581, I believe, total members. 544 that are assigned to those chapters, and others are unassigned to this point. But no, it's going to be a great undertaking, and you know, we've got a firm foundation. So it's just me coming in and, you know, basically switching roles with Wayne, and it'll be good. You know, I have a fantastic team, so it's all good. But it just happened much faster than I thought. The vote of confidence and everything, I woke up this morning and was told, hey, you only needed 11, but, you know, we need one more. And I was like, my ship didn't even vote yet. So, and by noon, I had over the amount, you know, way more than. So it was very flattering.
And you will make an excellent admiral, and I'm sure that things will go phenomenally well with you in command.
Thank you. And we look forward to, you know, bettering our relationship with you folks. So, you know, this will all work out great.
I'm sure that it will. And tonight, I'm hoping that by the end of our discussion, we'll have some ideas on how we can start working together again.
Absolutely.
The pandemic kind of put a damper on it. We started before the pandemic, and then the pandemic kind of threw a cold washcloth on the whole thing, and mm-hmm. nothing much went on with the projects we'd started. So, Tina and Brian, what are the chances of the USS Odyssey coming out of the mothballs and flying again proudly through space?
I'm good with that.
Definitely. Let's bring it back. And Admiral, congratulations. Your work is never done.
I know. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And Michael, I know you're familiar with the episode and that you've watched a lot of Star Trek. Are you a fan of Star Trek as well?
I was in its original form, and I saw this specific episode when it was originally broadcast. I can't believe I remember that many years ago, but I did see it, and I was completely enthralled with it, especially the beginning with that big green hand grabbing
yes.
the starship was pretty impressive. So, yes, I did see the original episode at the time that it was broadcast, and needless to say, I was thrilled that they were tackling Greek mythology as a whole. I really couldn't believe it, to be honest. I was just excited to see that taking place.
And that's one of the things that grabbed me, of course. I was born into the Greek culture. I went to a Greek parochial school. I was raised on the stories of the myths, and I was born in the heyday of the sword and sandal era. So I'm pretty well conditioned and imbued with mythology. So this was in the days before everybody knew about Chariots of the Gods and the ancient astronaut theories, they called it then. Now it's ancient alien theory. So I loved what they did again. Basically, the story was that 5,000 years or so ago, a merry band of travelers from outer space came to Earth and were worshipped as gods. And they remained gods and influenced our culture and our civilization until mankind somehow became arrogant and turned away, and the gods could no longer sustain themselves as memories. So they left the planet, and they waited for humanity to evolve to the point where they would go out to the stars and find them. And at the point of the episode, only Apollo was still around waiting for humanity to come, and humanity finally came. But it didn't go as well as Apollo anticipated. And I watched the episode again today, and I still enjoyed it a great deal, but I was struck with how obsolete some of the outlooks on there were, not only on Apollo's part concerning women, but also on the Enterprise's part concerning women and their role in outer space or on a starship. And I found it shocking. They didn't really give any details, but they kind of hinted that Apollo forced Carolyn Palamas into their tryst that they had. So I was kind of shocked at how much things had changed since this episode first aired, and Star Trek was considered phenomenally progressive for its time. What were some of your impressions on this episode, or some of your memories on this episode? We'll start with Bob.
Well, one, I believe it was so perfectly cast of
yes.
Michael Forrest. You know, just as Ricardo Montalban, you know, was the perfect Khan, Michael Forrest was so wonderful in that role. I mean, physically, you know, and he was, I believe, of Greek descent anyway, but he played the part so well. And had the physique, and you felt for him by the end of the episode, and I don't understand. I don't know where the idea of the tryst being forced, because I feel that she really fell in love with him, and he certainly fell in love with her. That when she had to pretend to, you know, say, you know, when she said to him, you know, You're no more than a, you know, I'm studying a species of bacteria, you know, like
uh-huh.
as a god, he was so hurt. I mean, you know, like that was the talk about an Achilles heel, you know, to, you know, no pun intended, but I mean, that was, you know, harder for him to hear than anything else. I just thought the acting was wonderful. And, you know, it was truly an epic episode. And really it wasn't a complicated episode. It was, but at the same time, you know, it really came down to the root of, you know, Kirk and them saying, you know, we've kind of outgrown you now and we're sorry, but as powerful as you are, we're not, you know, we can't just go back. and that was a interesting theme. And and just as an aside, having gotten to meet Michael Forrest, who on a lot, we saw him at the cafe at a shore leave of a number of years ago, just coming down to get, you know, out of the soda dispenser or something, and I think he was in a bathrobe or something, you know, and nobody paid any attention to him. And we were talking because it was before the Starfleet meeting. We were having a quickie breakfast in that little tiny cafe thing. I'm like, guys, that's Michael Forrest. That's Apollo, you know. So, you know, like, and so I went up to him and I said, I know you're a god, but would you mind coming over to our Starfleet meeting today? And I, which was like a half hour. I never expected him to show up, never. But I thought I'd extend a courtesy, and I said, this is real low key, but we would love to see. And he just walked in at some point during the course of the meeting, and I just said, excuse me, everyone, we have a god here, you know. So, and we just gave him a round of applause. And he just said hi to everybody. And it was just, you know, he didn't stay long, but I just thought that was a cool thing to do. And then later, the next day, we took him to breakfast. And he shared so many interesting stories with us. And I'll just give one example because I don't want to derail us from the main point. But he told all of us about a Western he did with Brian Keith. And if you remember Brian Keith, best known for Family Affair, you know, with Buffy and Jody and Uncle Mr. French and Sissy. But they were in a Western, and they had a fight. And Brian Keith just got, I guess he got so into it and a little nasty, he actually clocked, you know, Michael Forrest. And Michael Forrest, you know, I think clocked him back and were like, hey, you know, like, there's blocking and, you know, there's rehearsal involved. And I don't know if Brian Keith ever really apologized to him or not, but, you know, and I think they did end up having an understanding years later. But, you know, it was just a really candid moment, and you never know about little moments like that, you know. So he was, you know, he had so many interesting stories to tell of things, and that episode in particular he just loved. You know, and it didn't surprise me that he would come back, because I think he did Star Trek Continues after we had met him. So it didn't surprise me that even though he had aged, and I know they explained that within the context of the episode, which is just a wonderful series. I mean, it's closer, you know, they use the original sets and everything. It's just the cast is different. But to have him as a guest star and do a sequel to that episode was just, you know, awesome. And while he no longer had that physique or anything, he still had the same acting ability. And you once again were sympathetic to him in the storyline. So, you know, it definitely worked for me. So I like the story, the episode.
I liked him in the continuation story also, because in Pilgrim of Eternity, because even though, again, he didn't have the physique he had when he was younger, he still had the presence.
Yes, and, absolutely.
He pulled it off wonderfully, I thought. And it also gave a different twist to the tale that we saw in the original Star Trek. Because it seems he wasn't very truthful in who mourns for Adonais. You know, there were a lot of other things that he didn't share or consider. And Athena, who had been drawn into the wind, supposedly, she appears in that episode as well, if I remember correctly.
I have to rewatch that one again, but it's been a number of years. But he still had his acting chops, and you know, I know he was thrilled to have done that episode, and that fans remembered it for so long, you know, and people like us that just made him feel so welcome that we gave him, you know, because a lot of people remembered him more from As the World Turns, where he met his, you know, he was married to her, and it was the actress who played Jem. So I believe, I could be wrong on that. I know they were married in the soap opera. I was pretty certain they were married in real life, but maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, thank you so much, Bob. We'll go to Brian next. Brian, what are your thoughts and memories and impressions of Who Mourns for Adonai?
Well, it's always been one of my favorite episodes. Strictly from an in-universe standpoint, you had touched on Lieutenant Palamas and the whole forced romance thing. I don't really think so, because she was actually the ship's A&A officer. That was archaeology and anthropology. And she kind of had that mindset, I think, with it meeting Apollo that Lieutenant MacGyver's had with Khan. It was like meeting her life work in, you know, staring her in the face more or less. And I think she had more of that starstruck attitude with Apollo, where he turned on the charm a little bit and she ate up every bit of it. Because she was seeing what she could learn from him, and it just kind of snowballed from there. So, you know, and you don't get to be an officer like that without having probably a doctorate or a master's or something, especially assigned to a starship at that point. So it's just one of those things where it's another little nuanced thing worked into the episode that if you watch it just as a casual fan, you don't really catch it. But if you watch it as a self-obsessed Trek geek like I am, you catch all those. So, as far as the episode's production and whatnot, like you say, it was very progressive for the time, in as much as guys didn't go on TV dressed like Apollo did in skimpy little mini skirt and thing, especially on primetime TV. And Michael Forrest just kind of ate that up, too. He was showing off pretty much everything he had at one point or another.
Yeah, indeed. He did.
Yeah, so he was playing up the whole godlike thing to it, too. You know, the Greek god mythology, stereotypical look, stereotypical attitude, where he was the god and everybody else was just a mere mortal. So, you know, talking down to them as if they were children. And that's kind of the whole attitude he projected through the whole thing. They're children. They need to come back and learn from their parent or worship their parent or whatever the case may be. And it just kind of was one of those thought-provoking episodes, in as much as you just wonder how much of the power of the Greek gods at that point were indistinguishable from magic, from the lack of technology and lack of knowledge that the Greeks had for the time period.
That's a topic that I'm going to pick up in our ancient alien or ancient astronaut discussions, because there appears to have been technology beyond what we imagined in Mediterranean antiquity. And the most convincing is the Antikythera device, which is as sophisticated as a Swiss watch. And it goes during the age between Alexander the Great and Cleopatra and the first few Caesars. So it's very old, and yet it existed. So there are also written accounts of coin vending machines that dispensed both hot and cold beverages. There were toilets that flushed like 5,000 years ago. And there were animatronics that have been described in great detail in Alexandria. So there is some question as to what their actual level of technology was. But in the Star Trek episode, they left around 5,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago, after the time of the Trojan War, it seems, from the heroes that they kept talking about being proud and turning away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Agamemnon, Odysseus, and I can't remember who else. It's been a couple of weeks since I watched that episode, but I remember he mentioned several of them by name.
Yes, including Hercules, who suffered his wrath.
And Pan always bored him.
Yes, I found that very surprising that he equated Spock with Pan. From the mythology, they don't seem even remotely alike.
No, not really. Well, it's probably one of those deals that he thought Pan was smarter than he was, but he wasn't going to say it, and seeing how Spock reacted to him, it was probably the same thing. Oh, you're smarter than I am. I'm not talking to you.
Well, we had a Vulcan before Surak's teachings, or Pan was a Romulan, maybe, or some other Vulcan people.
That could have been.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. Tina, your
yes,
impressions,
sir.
Your thoughts, your memories, your recollections.
My recollections. Watching the episode the first time, that was one of the only shows that my parents would let us watch with Star Trek. Watching it, I, as a younger person, I'm going to say, I felt really bad for Apollo, and I just remember bawling my eyes out, thinking the gods were dead and everything, and, you know, and then going back to it again later on and seeing, okay, wait a minute, maybe not only this is like about the Greek gods and anything like what we've all touched on, but also you can look at it another way, as in we as parents, when we watch our children grow up and we watch our children kind of more or less go on with their own lives and things like that and kind of leave us behind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when Zeus and the gods left was to prevent them from being left behind, leaving with, I don't want to say good memory, but more or less leaving with the memory, okay, you have progressed to this point, you can now function on your own. But then, you know, when they got to the planet and everything, they realized how much they really depended on the worship on of the Earthbound, and the gods falling into despair, floating off into the wind, turning back into sea foam, everything like that. Sort of melancholy. Watching it again as an adult, and like Brian said, you know, with the lieutenant. Polanis, yes. I can never pronounce her last name very well. with the person with the degree of archaeology and anthropology. And, you know, touching on that, you know, you were saying about the Ankathera device, and Brian was saying about, you know, this is the past, this is history, this is a god, this is someone like that coming to you. And, you know, we'll probably touch on this when we talk about the ancient aliens and everything like that. But I don't know if you watched the new Indiana Jones movie, but you really should if you haven't.
Not yet, but I plan on seeing it.
Oh, my, I will spoil it then. Yeah. Nobody spoil it for Hercules, okay? So, we were talking about the Greek influence after the conversation we had. You know, Brian and I were talking about the episode. We're talking about the influence of the gods and influences of Greek mythology on Star Trek. Roddenberry, you know, it was a Western as well. So,
yes.
Like you're mentioning them getting in a little bit of an altercation, you know, and with the other episodes with the Westerns and things like that. There was a little, seemed to be like a little bit of a Western kind of thing. You know, the lone man standing at the end, you know. And I just thought that was really interesting. I mean, growing up, you know, now we're as an adult, you know, you kind of take different looks at the episode and whatnot. And I think that's kind of like the beauty of Star Trek and the beauty of episodes like this is that you can take different things every time you watch. It doesn't matter how many times you watch it, 10 million times, Brian. Yeah, he's laughing at me. And you come away with a new, fresh aspect of it, so.
Yeah, it's great to revisit it. I revisit it every now and then. I always get something very different from it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Tina, very much. Very insightful, your comments.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Michael, you already shared some of your memories and impressions. Any others you'd like to add?
Well, I think the passion between Apollo and the lieutenant, I think it was very real. I don't think it was forced in any way. I think that it was definitely a love thing going on there. I'll say this, that of all of the episodes I've seen, speaking in past tense, I don't think I've ever seen a more emotional episode. I think there were some powerful emotions expressed here of love and loss, especially at the end, of course, when Apollo, with tears in his eyes, is beseeching the heavens, knowing what he was about to lose. I think it was very strong. I don't remember any episode. And this, of course, is very subjective, but I don't remember any episode being as powerful emotionally as this was. But, you know, it's so enthralling to see once again the Greek myths and the gods and how they interacted with humans. I think this was a perfect example of just how strong that interaction was and is, for that matter. So that's what I came away with, but very powerful emotions in this episode. And it certainly stayed with me for all of these decades, if you will.
Thank you very much. And you and I have had countless conversations on the sword and sandal genre over the years. And I'm not going to get into those waters tonight, because otherwise we could be talking about that for hours and hours and hours. But thank you. Now, I've already touched on this, and some of you have already expressed an opinion on this, but I'll ask the question anyway. And again, we'll start with Bob. Bob, what do you think about the whole theory of ancient astronauts or merry bands of travelers coming here thousands of years ago and somehow affecting humanity and our culture?
Oh, I think it's fantastic, both fact and fiction. I mean, it lends itself to so many science fiction type stories, be it from Star Trek, as we saw, Stargate, and just about, you know, every episode, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers. There's been episodes where that concept has been brought in, and in reality, you know, it wouldn't be too surprising to find out that is, in fact, what occurred, and given that we still can't figure out, you know, how certain things like the pyramids could possibly have been constructed, or things left behind like Stonehenge without some kind of advanced, you know, assistance from a higher, you know, from a higher being. And so I think it's fascinating. I think it also lends itself to so many great, you know, inspirations of stories. And it would make sense too. So, I mean, you know, I really think that, you know, it's something. It's not like even a trope. It's like such a good, you know, like the concept of time travel. I think it will be with us forever as a great theme within science fiction and also in just sociology and anthropology. And you know, we may yet find proof that is exactly what occurred.
Thank you very much. And yes, new things keep coming out. Like I remember not too long ago, they showed a image of what was labeled by scholars and archaeologists as a woman looking into a mirror. But when you look at it through our eyes today, it looks very much like a laptop with a USB port. And once you see it, you can't unsee it, and it's a real image. It wasn't doctored or manufactured. So was it a mirror? Was it a laptop with a USB port? Was it something else entirely? We don't know, but just like those ancient airplanes that were labeled birds and insects when they were found, and now you know, we see them in a totally different light because of what's come after the time of the people that made these identifications. So who knows what new information will come out as this time passes. Thank you, Bob. Brian?
Well, there's good arguments to be made on both sides of it. You know, that
true
ancient technology that we no longer have because it's been forgotten for whatever reason. I mean, there's technology now that we had 40 years ago that nobody knows how to work anymore because it's just fallen into disuse. And that could be the exact same way that technologies that ancient peoples had that, you know, we've forgotten to use or just don't know how to use. Can't figure it out because we're not of that time period, not working with it every day. So there's that aspect of it. On the flip side of it, there's good argument to be made that there were ancient aliens and whatnot, because there are carvings of figures that look like they're sitting in airplanes with space helmets and rocket ships and that kind of thing that can't be explained. There's ancient technology that can't be explained that even now we can't replicate. So, you know, there, and just about sci-fi show has touched on one form or another, Stargate being the biggest one, with the Gual, you know, the ancient Egyptian and whatever other gods that came to Earth and basically enslaved humanity at that point, and humanity overthrew them later on but kept some of the technology. You know, Star Trek's touched on it. Battlestar Galactica's touched on it. There was actually an original of the final episode of Galactica, the new Galactica, where it had flashed forward into modern times and actually had a military group finding about the Galactica, basically a buried battle star somewhere in Arizona, like it had fallen and crashed into the ground and buried itself, and they just found it, you know, however many thousands of years later, still relatively intact. So, you know, every sci-fi show has touched on it in one form or another. So it's just one of those things that, like I said, there's arguments to be made on both sides of the spectrum. So I personally think it's a very good possibility that that kind of thing had happened. Now, whether they were extraterrestrials or they were just an advanced civilization from another part of the world, that's still up for some debate. But was there some kind of influence on some of the ancient, you know, forgive me here, the ancient dumb technology versus the ancient advanced technology? Yeah, sure. So that's just personal opinion there. So I think it could happen.
Thank you. You're right. I'm pretty much stuck at the same point. It doesn't necessarily have to be people from other star systems. It could be advanced civilizations that were here on Earth, because there are plenty of stories about that too, about people coming from beyond the sea or not just from the skies. And if they came from the skies, they could have flown just like we fly now. And I'm remembering like the cargo cults, you know, that took aviators for beings from the heavens who were bringing them food and so on and so forth. So thank you. Tina.
Yes.
What do you think about the question? What are your thoughts?
Well, we touched on this the other night. I am a big believer in the ancient astronaut theory and the ancient people theory. But this is something that Brian and I talk a lot about, especially when I get a new book in. He's like, okay, what did you order? What's it about? What part of the collection does it go in? but there's mentionings of every ancient civilization about different peoples, like from beyond the sea or beyond the skies or beyond wherever. Every civilization has a story, representations, technology, whatever, from the ancient Egyptians to the Temple of Dendra to the Saqqara Fire to the ancient Mesoamericans with more or less complete landing strips and pyramids about the same size and the same shape and the same almost makeup as the Step Pyramid. The stories from ancient Greek culture, even though it was written hundreds of years after the events of what was seen and what was heard and everything else. And, I mean, all over the world there, and there's always in every story and every myth or whatever, there is a modicum of fact. And, you know, I've read books from the Bible. I've read books that are based on spaceships and craft and peoples that were actually in the Bible. which is what I first kind of got introduced to ancient giants here in the United States and in Mongolia that weren't supposed to be there. And I think it's such a fascinating subject. And like I said, we were talking about this the other day with the Freedom of Information Act. You know, people are now starting to say, oh, my gosh, this is happening a lot more. And it's matching to, and then, oh, the people are as well, oh, yeah, did you hear the story about so-and-so and such-and-such? And that's how the information goes on, and interest in this field is kind of going up. And I do have to warn people, that if you start studying ancient astronaut theory and ancient technologies, things like that, it will challenge faith. You have to be willing to look at this and look at with an open mind, but you must, if you want to have your faith, you have to question if you want your faith really that challenged.
Those are all good points, I also order a lot of stuff on ancient astronauts, and I have quite a vast collection, and my wife asks me too, you know, what's in the package, which collection is this for? So I'm looking forward to inviting you to these discussions, Tina.
Okay.
Before we move on to Michael, here it is thunder showering severely. And some of the areas that this thunderstorm has passed through lost power. So if all of a sudden I go silent, that's what happened.
Oh, wow.
Michael, what do you think of the question?
Well, I think a good point was just made. I think some of the most astonishing evidence for me, and Von Daniken certainly opened up our eyes to evidence that was really right there before us all of this time. But I think for me, some of the most astonishing evidence is in biblical art. I mean, if you take a look at some of the biblical artwork from 1350 forward, I mean, there can be no mistake as far as interpretation is concerned of what you're looking at. It's clearly objects that look like 21st century aircraft of some kind. I mean, there can be no mistake. You couldn't mistake some of this artwork as, you know, for angels or blimps or planes or whatever, demons, whatever the case might be. There's a painting, The Crucifixion of Christ, from 1350. It's on the ceiling of a monastery in Kavaso, and it's clearly with Christ on the cross, and it clearly depicts two spacecraft, one on each side of the cross. There can be no mistake. For me, the evidence, some of the strongest evidence, is in biblical artwork, and I'm always amazed when I sit and contemplate it. I ask myself, what did these artists know? What did these artists know back in 1350? What did they know back in 1428? There was a painting done called The Miracle of the Snow, which again clearly depicts saucer-shaped the sky full of saucer-shaped objects, and the population is looking up and beholding them. We're talking about paintings that were done in the 1400s. What did these artists know? What knowledge did they have that took these visions during biblical times? I mean, you know, and then the most astonishing painting for me was the Madonna, which was done in the 1400s, where you have the Madonna with the Christ child, and there's obviously some kind of saucer-shaped craft above them, and there's a gentleman on the hill, and he's looking up at it, and so is his dog sitting right next to him.
I remember
again,
that.
Yes, and these again, my question would be, and it gnaws at me, these artists knew something. They knew something. They knew something that these were just not abstract visions. These were looked like technological crafts of some kind. So for me, the strongest evidence is in biblical art at this point in time.
thank you for that, and you'll be our expert in that regard in these conversations. The first one I'm planning is actually based on a book that you mentioned the other day, Odyssey of the Gods by Eric von Däniken.
Yes.
I have a couple shelves full of books that deal with the topic, but von Däniken's kind of is a really, just like in Star Trek, looking at that question, the best place to start is who mourns for Adonais. In the ancient alien material, the best place to start with that question is in Eric von Däniken's Odyssey of the Gods.
Absolutely. He opened our eyes. He opened our eyes to the evidence that already was before us. We just never looked at it that way before, so, somehow. But he opened the eyes of all of us in this area.
Thank you so very much. And Bob, are you interested in this topic at all? Should I extend an invitation to you to participate in those discussions?
Yes. I think this is a fascinating topic. I may not know as much as some of the other panelists here, but I haven't done any extensive research or anything. But I think that, you know, it not only, as I said, lends itself to some wonderful storylines from various sci-fi. Just about every show that we've seen has picked up on the theme of that. But the reality of it, I think, is fascinating as well. And I think as we learn more, as more documentation becomes declassified, I think we're going to learn a whole lot. And it would not surprise me in the least. So I wouldn't mind at all being included.
Fantastic. I like talking to you, and you're very knowledgeable and insightful, so that would be great. And Brian, I know you know about this stuff, but is this something that you would like to talk about repeatedly?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, great. I extend an invitation to you as well. Okay, I don't have a date yet for the von Däniken book, but it'll be within the month. And I'm going to continue these science fiction panel discussions as well, and I'm going to stick into Star Trek for now. And I think the next place to visit with Star Trek episodes in ancient Greek mythology is Plato's stepchildren. How does that sound to you guys?
Yeah.
That is the logical next step.
Okay, great. So that'll be the next one to discuss, Plato's stepchildren. For those of you who don't remember the episode, the Enterprise finds a bunch of Greek philosophers or inspired by Greek philosophers who had psionic powers. And they function very loosely like the Greek pantheon in that they each had a different degree of power, and there was an organized structure, but there was a lot of vying for who's in charge. And anyway, the Enterprise winds up there and becomes their playthings, and so on and so forth. So that'll be our next panel discussion topic. And also, I want to pick up where we were before the pandemic. And before the pandemic, we started talking to different people who were running different ships to find out about their ships in Starfleet and what they were doing. And since all Starfleet people that I know about care about this world and trying to make it a better place, they're usually involved in charities of some sort. So we talked about that. And then we were looking for ways to interact. So I'm still looking to do that. Bob, is that still within the realm of possibilities for you?
Oh, absolutely. We would love to get back to that now that we're out of that terrible time, you know, which seems yet so close and yet thankfully, you know, is behind us.
Yes, we're still in the pandemic, but the time of pandemic emergency has passed, whatever that means.
Right.
We have returned to some sort of normalcy. Tina and Brian.
Yes. I think that'd be a great place to start, except I don't know what I'd done with all the writings we did about what Odyssey would have been doing at that time.
Yeah, I don't know what I did with a lot of my stuff also. It's been so long. It's been a few years. But we had gotten pretty far, too. And then all of a sudden, everything kind of just stopped. So we will start anew, and the papers will show up when they will.
Okay.
And, Michael, I don't know if you're into Star Trek fandom or interested in becoming involved with science fiction organizations and people, but if you are interested, an invitation extends to you as well.
Thank you so much. I'm learning from all of you right now. I'm in the process of learning, but thank you for that, and I'm interested to know more.
And Brian brought up a lot of other franchises that I'll be visiting. I'll be visiting after we finish with Star Trek, the original series. I plan on doing Stargate, Battlestar Galactica Classic, Battlestar Galactica Re-Envisioned. Even Babylon 5 had some really interesting points, not many on mythical gods. So I'm talking about the Vorlons specifically, and there was an episode that showed that the Vorlons were the ancient gods as well as a lot of modern gods throughout the universe, and our fate and destiny to become Vorlons ourselves. So that's a very fertile topic to discuss. So would that interest you guys too, if we not only stick with Star Trek, but we travel the multiverse of tales and explore what they have to say about deification and deities as well?
Yes.
Okay, we will do it then. And Bob, how about we start with the Challenger again? So when I create a monthly episode, I'll probably do a special or two till I can schedule it on a regular basis. But we'll start with the Challenger. And Tina and Brian, we'll start with the USS Odyssey.
So you got it.
We'll do one episode with the Challenger, one episode with the USS Odyssey, and then I'll invite Michael onto the Pride of Olympus, and he'll be one of my Olympian crewmates as we seek the galaxies throughout the multiverse to locate what happened to the gods of old.
That's great. Looking forward to that.
I think it'll be a lot of fun, and Matt, I don't know if you guys know it, but I've been published in over 20 anthologies, and I have a chapter in a book by Llewellyn coming out next year, and I'm currently working on an article about time travel, so I'm appearing in like all of these books, and I have access to other psychic investigators and other authors, so we could have like really lively discussions, and we could have guest speakers, and I have good relationships with several publishers, so we can get book authors. So we can really grow this, beyond our small circle if we decide to in the not-too-distant future.
That sounds wonderful.
Oh, that sounds great.
Oh, thank you. And I've shared what I want to do with it. What do you guys? Where would you guys like to go on this voyage? Bob?
I like the idea of us, discussing how we can help the area community as well, in our own fandom circles, and how we can do things that would be community service oriented, and we could discuss them and, on the broader scale. So I would love to have us delve into that a little bit. I mean, I think we could really alternate at times, one program focus on that, and then other times focus on other things, and just keep it pretty broad.
I agree. Thank you very much, Tina.
Yes, sir. Yes, dear.
what do you dream of? What would you like to see in this adventure we're starting?
Wow. Star Trek right now, I think, kind of is in a, what would you call it, Brian, Star Trek is in a bit of a resurgence. So maybe this is another way to take Star Trek fandom on another cruise, as it were, another five-year journey, as it were.
Awesome. I'm honored to be on this journey with you and Brian. Brian, what would you like to see?
right, get up here.
Well, like she said, Star Trek is kind of on a resurgence, more or less, with the new Picard series and the cartoons and all of that, just generally putting it back into the public consciousness again after so long of just kind of laying there. And it's a good way to get people into reading sci-fi again, watching sci-fi again, writing sci-fi again. And I think it's a good thing to make people think. And Trek has always been a bit of a cerebral show.
Yes.
And people actually start to question beliefs and things that they've just accepted as for granted because Trek presents it in a different way. And it kind of, for lack of a better term, cloaks social issues in science fiction. So they don't really know that they're being talked to about, you know, say racism or about politics or about wars or whatever. They're watching sci-fi, and then at the end of it, they go, oh, wait a minute, that sounds very similar to insert crisis of the current era. So
yeah,
it makes them think about what they're seeing in real life versus what they're watching on the screen. And I think that's a good thing as much as it, again, makes people think, not just accept what they see, but it makes them actually think about what's going on.
That's a good point, and that takes Bob's point, a little bit deeper than we can come up with something that we all believe is very important to address, and that could be how we address it. And that'll be our community service collectively. And we could still each do things individually or with our Star Trek groups. So thank you. That's a good point. And Michael?
Well, I think, continuing to explore the intimacy that the Greeks had with their gods is a eye-opening as well, and I'd like to see just as Star Trek has lit a fire in the imaginations of so many. I think the Greek, obviously the Greek myths have done the same, and to combine the two is exciting to say the least. So I'd like to continue to explore that area if we can, because I think there's so many possibilities there. The intimacy that the gods had with the Greek people, it's an area of continued fascination. So I think we should continue more of that as well.
That is something I'm definitely planning. The Greek mythical gods are involved in several cosmic spiritualities. And some of them have had shows on our channel, either as guests or as hosts. So I'm addressing this question with them as well. So it'll be an example of people who still are in contact with or claim to be in contact with the space gods of ancient Greece, even today in our world, and where the Greeks are giving certain teachings and encouraging certain actions. So that is a dimension that will be there, too. I'm trying to keep them separate in terms of the overall theme, because not everyone who's interested in science fiction is interested in ancient astronauts and vice versa, and not everyone who's interested in cosmic spirituality, ancient and modern, is into, again, science fiction. So this way we could approach it from different angles, but I do plan on approaching that. So thank you very much, Michael.
You're very welcome. Looking forward to it.
And we have time for one more question. How can people contact you? We'll start with Bob.
Well, I can be reached through probably my easiest to remember email is beamaboard, all one word, at AOL. Now I can give the, I always did before, but now especially region7.com if you want to learn more about on my corner of Starfleet, or sfi.org if you want to learn more about the international aspect of it, or the local aspect being my chapter, usschallenger.org. And, I'm always, I always enjoy hearing from Star Trek fans, be they members of Starfleet or not. I had a blast at Shore Leave meeting some new fans So by all means, you know, reach out to me.
Thank you, Bob. And Bob is an awesome human being. I've known him for decades, although we lost touch for a while when I stopped going to a convention. And I'm really happy that my path crossed his again and that we're doing a lot of cool things together again.
I've been enjoying it, too.
Tina and Brian, how can folks contact you?
Well, you can reach me at bc1701@aol.com or on Facebook. I'm always on Facebook. So that's pretty much the easiest way to get me, get Chip, get, well, both of us, actually. So
thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, anything you want to know, just let us know.
Okay, thank you so very much. And Michael?
You can always message me at Michael Del Rossio. Text me at boldspiritsaol.com. My main area of interest are the classic flying saucer cases in history, and I'm also very much involved with alternative medicine and have been for 40 years, integrative medicine, and I'm always anxious to questions and discuss with people that area of interest, and I'm always there for free counseling as well. They can write to me at Michael Del Rossio, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006, with any health questions or issues. And we also do integrative prayer work for people. So any of those areas, they can contact me.
Thank you so much. And I must add in the couple of minutes that we have remaining that I know Tina and Brian for years. Unfortunately, we never met. But since the paperback swap days, I believe, when people swap books over the internet. And I'm glad that we also kept in touch. And I'm glad that now the pandemic is over, we're in touch again and doing things again. You guys are awesome individuals. And Tina happens to be a roller derby queen, which is really cool that I'm friends with a roller derby queen, too. And Michael Del Rossio, I've never met either. We met each other, I believe, on Facebook. But he's become one of my closest friends, and we have a lot in common. And we've had now maybe hundreds of hours of interesting conversations both on and off the air. So, Michael, I'm glad our paths crossed, and may they continue to wend our way through this life, conversing and exploring the mysteries.
Thank you so much. It's a great light in my life. I consider you a very close friend, even though we've never met. And it's been an honor and a pleasure.
The same here. And thank you to my audience, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on through one of the links on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody, and thank you.
Good night, and thank you.
Good night.